At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
None other than
Formula 3 world champion Gabriel Borsellino. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for the invite.
Appreciate it.
Hello, guys.
Probably touch to the side there, mate. Don't want to change it too much. We've got this camera looking at James. We wouldn't want you to.
You don't want to ruin my shot.
Yeah.
People have died for this. Here.
You just move a little bit to that way.
I'm almost in there.
There you go, mate. Sweet.
This would have been a great thing to organise before we started rolling, but we'll carry
it. It's fine. We're going.
How are you, mate? You're straight off the plane from the Middle East into London for the Summer Awards tonight. So,
it was quite a crazy travel these last 2 days. I've been in Abu Dhabi for the F2 test, and now I was in Milan for 1 day, just changed the clothes in the bag and put everything. I have the hour today of Autosport.
Mm-hmm. So conveniently, now you've just revealed to everyone that we've essentially
just done a quick wardrobe. Sure, I've only put on a cardigan, so I'm not.
Yeah,
really
you've not even changed. I've changed. Obviously, we had Luke Branning on 15 minutes ago, and we're now fully into Gabby Bortoletto. So there you go. Actually, Luke's just right there. Yes. You can't see him on screen, but he's
Shut
just
up!
Right there. But so how are you, mate? How was the first experience in the F2 wagon?
It's a different car, like this. You know, what are you guys laughing?
No, just wondering what your feedback and thoughts are after this 3-day test that you've just done.
I mean, the car is different than F3. It's much heavier. It's more powerful in some ways. But I mean, F3 is very it's very fun to drive. You know, F3 it's a unique car, and I don't know what I prefer, to be honest. F2 has nice things of being very powerful, so you can just go on power and you really feel the turbo, you know, coming in and everything. But at the same point, it's a very, very heavy car and low speeds. You know very well what I'm talking about.
And, and were you racing this year's car or
next year it's still private. No one's, you know, we have an idea how is the car and everything.
Yuri knows, but, he's been testing it. He says it's worse, but continue.
Perfect.
But I'm gonna bring that up, actually. It was one of my points in the question. So obviously you've won F3 this year. We'll go through that season in a minute. But going into F2 next year with a regulation change, the old guard, like your Novalax, your Armstrongs, your Drugoviches, you know, your poor chairs, not that he can do it again. They don't have that knowledge of the car like you would have been up against the last 3 years, I suppose, 4 years. So level, almost like a level, much more level playing field, I should say, going into next year. Does that give you a bit more confidence, or are you a little bit more still just nervous about what that new car is going to feel like?
I don't care, to be honest. Like, I mean,
good answer.
The new car is something I think it will not change so much driving wise. So, and a good driver, you know, you don't take ages to adapt to a new car, you know, you would just adapt to it and that's it. So it's a new car for everyone, but at the same time, it's not that it's going to be like something completely the opposite way. So,
yeah. I mean, it's not like you're going to bike racing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Man. It will be probably a very small step from the actual car to the new one. Mm-hmm. And for sure, there will be very strong drivers next year on F2. And I think this is nice because it will be, in my opinion, one of the strongest years in the last years. Mm-hmm. I mean, and because a lot of...
There's a lot of rookies this year.
A lot of rookies that is coming in from three different generations. So basically, my generation, there is also Kimi coming on now. Mm-hmm. So he's coming from Freca. And there is Martins, Biermann, and all these guys, Hauger. I mean, there's a lot of good guys in the grid next season. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, mate.
It should be good, yeah.
It should be great. We'll be commentating.
Hey, we'll be on the comms. We'll be hard.
We'll be commentating it hard, mate. So you better give us some proper performances.
What do you mean commentating? Like during the races, live timing?
Yeah, of course, mate. We've been, I mean, he's been doing it this year. We've been doing it for some of the F1 rounds when I was in racing Formula 2. But next year, obviously, I'll have a bit more free time.
Okay.
So I'll be commentating your races.
Yeah. And so if you'd like to tune in for some of the most biased commentary that you'd ever hear on the internet.
We'll be pushing you on like crazy. It's not, you know, it's not a level playing field in the commentary box.
We have favourites here at Screaming Meals.
Yeah, but we do have favourites at Screaming Meals. And you're one of my my favorites out there.
Thank you very much, Clem.
I'll be.
Appreciate it, mate.
My guy. So, that's just the Brazilian in me, you know?
Okay. Yeah, you know, you know that we always had this discussion during this year, me and Clem, because at the end of the day, Clem was in F2, but he spent more time in the F3 truck with me than in the actual F2 truck. And but to be honest, it was very helpful for me, you know, having a guy like Clem on my side. And yeah, don't get too excited, you know, just because I'm saying good things about you. But it was very nice because Clem, when he comes in the room, everyone start to already laugh and, you know, because he's going to say
they
something
know what's coming.
Very fun or shit, you know.
Thanks, mate. One or the other. It's either going to be fun or complete bullshit, but one of the two.
But I mean, it's always nice.
How's his Portuguese? Because to my ears, very
good.
I don't know. Okay.
Like, it's impressive because he doesn't have any lesson. He has, for sure, a lot of Brazilian friends now.
Yeah.
And he's learning. But when he picks up the phone, he's like, Fala, irmão, tudo bem? He's already, like, super Portuguese boy. So I'm like...
Because I hear one end of it, but I don't know if it's just completely broken Portuguese and you're just...
No, it's actually good. And the accent is always good as well.
Yeah, Novak accent. Okay.
Of course. I mean...
You can pick... These days, you've got a choice of what? Kiwi, British, French, Brazilian... is there any more?
Italian.
Is there sometimes you go a bit Italian?
Bit of Scottish.
You can go Scottish.
I can go Scottish. I can. I top of the morning too. I could go Irish too.
Yeah. So we've covered the British Isles. Fantastic.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. I can go French. It's very easy for me. It's a background stuff. Yeah.
I can do quite a good Marcus Ericsson or Yuri Vips, like from the Scandinavian countries. You're kind of
Brother, you're a bit off there.
all the words you come through, like you're just pronouncing the letter R the whole time you're saying it.
Good on you, James. Tell you what, your Donald Trump impression was much better than that.
Donald Trump impression is second to none. Nobody does a better impression of Donald Trump than me. Not even Donald Trump. I've seen it. Played golf with the guy. Good golfer, not great.
Anyways, I think we're going to call it a slight break here because the food's just arrived, James.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
First thing first, we've had a small break because Gabby, being the ultimate racing driver out here, has just had his five guys.
Yeah.
But you know, driver diet off season. How did you rate the meal?
I mean, Clem, when we were choosing what to eat, he told me that the cheeseburger was huge. No, wait.
Yeah.
Is it right?
It's quite a large cheeseburger.
Yeah,
normally.
Exactly. And then it was like that big.
Yeah.
So it was fucking.
It's happened before.
Terrible.
It's happened
like
before,
where he's promised
size
and it's turned out to be that
big.
No,
it was okay. It was okay. It was missing ketchup for the fries, but the rest.
You guys eat a lot, actually. Like, racing, like, that's something I've noticed. Like, you guys eat a lot.
Well, you know me, I love my food.
Yeah.
I'm French. And actually, having been to Brazil, once again, you know, we're going to go back to Brazil.
Well, at least we've got a Brazilian guest this time. Like,
yeah.
We've got a guest from England and you just won't shut the fuck up about Sao Paulo. It's a bit frustrating. But
yeah, I know. But yeah,
this
so,
week's
no,
okay.
Brazilians, man, they love their food and I love it there because there's so many different, like, kinds of food there. Even different from, like even Japanese food's great in Brazil. Like, that's the thing
You get a lot of Portuguese sort of Brazilian infusions and in Japanese food there. So sushi
samba,
well. Perfect example.
Sushi
samba, Peruvian,
great.
I think that is. But Brazilians also love their motorsport. So Brazil's probably got arguably one of the best sort of heritages for motorsport in South America, possibly world.
Absolutely.
Is there anything that you could pin that to? Like, I know you had your Fittipaldis, your Senna's, you know, and everybody else's, all the legends there.
PKs,
exactly. Thank you. And it, like, is it the guys? Is there a culture? Is it, you know, from your side, is there anything about being Brazilian that you feel towards motorsport?
It's difficult to say exactly one reason why normally the Brazilian guys are very good.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion is, you know, every country has their own culture. And, you know, you go to Finland, for example, there is a Finland driver. He's a very cold driver normally, you know. He, under pressure or not under pressure or under any circumstance, the guy can keep himself very cold.
Machine.
Yeah. And in Brazil, I would say our strength is like, we suffer a lot to, you know, to make a career work,
mm-hmm.
because we come from a very, not poor country, you know, but, you know, it's very expensive to a Brazilian driver nowadays go to Europe and race and make a proper career, because, you know, Euro is completely out of
it's
range.
It's a different world.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, I think, would you say that also leaving your country, having to, like, move away from your family, your friends.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You know, you need to move. And then, for example, I moved when I was 12 and my brother was living here. He stopped racing like this. I could continue racing, you know. So it's a lot of things involved that at the end of the day makes you stronger and makes you want to reach the target that in my case is Formula One, for example. I mean, you know, thinking about everything I left in Brazil, everything I had and everything I could have in Brazil, like from the family that I come from, it's a good family. So, you know, I don't miss anything in Brazil. I have a very good life there. And I said, no, I don't need this. Like, I really want to be a Formula One driver one day. So I moved when I was 12 to live by myself here in Europe. And, you know, this is something that every day that I woke up and I was feeling a little bit sad or something like this, I would remember everything I did. So this keep pushing me, you know, keep pushing me like, man, look what you did. Look what you left behind. You need to keep pushing. You need to be the best, you know, you need to, you know, keep smashing it. So I think that's one of the biggest strengths of the Brazilian, because I'm not the only one. And I come from a good family. Imagine the guys that came from a very poor family, what they needed to pass through. So,
yeah. No, I mean, so for you, I mean, it sounds as though it more does come from your own personality within you that you want to succeed rather than the sort of national pride, all that kind of stuff. But it is, you know, there's a lot, there's so many quick guys from Brazil. Shout out to New Zealand as well. We punch above our weight. But
yeah, New Zealand's pretty good as well.
We're pretty handy. But, you know, there's a lot. So for you, like when you grew up, like who was the guy when you first started watching F1? Was it Massa?
Yeah, Massa was driving, but I mean, Senna is for sure the idol of all the Brazilians, you know. It's not Massa, it's not Barrichello.
That's interesting to hear.
They are legends, you know, all of them, because all of them made history in Formula One. But Senna is, it's Senna, you know.
Yeah.
He's arguably the best of all time. Yeah. You know, so, I mean.
So maybe Senna's like a good, like.
Yeah, he was the guy that I always looked for since I was very young. Even if he was not alive, I would watch the old videos, the old races, heard histories about him, about, like, you know, from my father, from my family.
Yeah.
And yeah, nowadays, for example, I'm lucky enough to have contact with Felipe Massa and Barrichello, all these Formula One legends that, you know.
It's weird to have their number on your phone, right?
And yeah, exactly.
Because when Scott Dixon, I got his, you know, we started talking to each other. I was like, this is fucking weird. But, you know, so.
Actually, that's a good question. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
Don't start with this.
I know who it is.
Who's Luke Browning?
Luke Browning? Good on you, mate.
Macau winner.
Let me check.
Who's the most famous non-motorsport person you have in your phone?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question.
No motorsport.
Non-motorsport. Okay. Don't say James Blair.
Wow. Oh,
not
man.
Saved as a contact, probably.
I need to think, you know, it's not so easy like this.
We'll put a photo of,
like,
that.
I have for example Massa's phone, Barrichello phone, but I mean motorsport, out of motorsport, it's difficult.
Natanzinho.
Not Taylor Swift or anything like that.
Wait, Nathan.
Oh my God, he doesn't even know the Brazilian singers.
I don't know.
Forget it.
I don't know.
Yeah, you know better than me the Brazilian singers. I know.
Felipe Amorim.
You see,
Natanzinho, all the boys, you know.
All the boys.
Hey, all the lads and the lasses at the top of their games. Anita, all of them, you know.
Grouse.
Great.
Do you want to give us a Portuguese question? Just while we're waiting.
Well, do you want to read it in British first?
Well, I just did.
In England. O Brasil tem, sem dúvida, uma das heranças automobilísticas mais ricas de qualquer país do mundo. É de longa a mais significativa da América do Sul. Existe uma razão ou talvez uma pessoa que você identificaria como a grande responsável por isso.
Congratulations, mate.
Well, can you answer the question?
Senna, man.
Give us the Portuguese.
In Portuguese.
Ah, com certeza é o Senna, Clem.
Ah, grande.
Ele é o maior de todos os tempos, não tenho o que falar. Ele foi o cara que inspirou todos os brasileiros, eu acredito.
Sim, certo.
Certo.
And so as a Brazilian who have recently signed, congratulations, by the way, with McLaren to be part of their program.
Thank you very much.
You know, stepping into that team that not only Senna, but a lot of other legends from Brazil have had some great success with.
Fittipaldi was the first champion for
McLaren. How does it feel to you to be a part of a team that's originally from New Zealand?
Great question.
Okay. I mean, McLaren is a very historical team. And I think since I was very young, one of my dream teams was McLaren.
Yeah, same as the rest of us, I think.
You know, it was McLaren and especially...
It's McLaren and Ferrari, right? Let's be realistic.
No.
No?
That was McLaren and Red Bull, man.
Oh, okay, so Red Bull's like almost
really?
Like the new...
Yeah, I guess for the young ones, it's now the new team.
Yeah, it can be because like in 2010, 11, 12, 13, you know, when I basically started racing, Vettel was winning everything and I was a big fan of him in the moment. So I think Red Bull and McLaren, but McLaren was always my biggest one because, you know, Senna and every Brazilian driver that has been through there.
Such a cool paint scheme as well back in the day. That sort of that chrome and fluoro red.
To be
awesome.
Honest, yeah, the chrome car.
No, but the best one is the MP44, man.
Yeah.
Marlboro car.
The Marlboro car is iconic, but if I had to pick any car, actually, that's the next question to you, but if I had to pick any car that I would want to drive in, if I could... I think it would be the year Fernando and Lewis were up against 07. Each other.
Yeah,
the 07 McLaren was, I think, the nicest looking car of all time.
Yeah.
In terms of paint job. And also, like...
I think the 08 car as well, though, because I liked all like the extra little bits they put on it. But
I think the thing is with those cars, people don't quite realize, but when you compare a current Formula One car to an old car...
The noise, though.
The noise, A, and then B, how small the old F1 cars used to be. They used to be the size of an F3 car, more or less.
Yeah.
And now they're huge.
Have either of you, because you're both a bit younger than me, have either of you been to a Grand Prix that wasn't turbo hybrid era?
Yeah.
I reckon you wouldn't have, right? That, oh, my.
You've only heard the...
It tickles the inside
of your brain, like those cars back before the turbos.
I've not went to many Grand Prix in my life.
Well, recently.
Recently, you've done a few.
Yeah. Guys, okay. But just because of Formula 3, you know. But before that, I've never went to a Formula 1 Grand Prix.
Oh, so your first ever
Grand Prix was
Bahrain?
No, it was Brazil the year before.
Right.
Because I was already signed with Fernando in A14.
Yeah.
So he invited me to go there, you know, in Brazil.
That's pretty cool that your first ever Grand Prix was an Alonso invite.
Yeah. I mean, A14, you know, so.
Yeah. It's got the name on the flag.
It was good. It was nice. But
so if you could pick one car in Formula One history that you'd want to race in that is not the Senna McLaren.
Ferrari from Schumacher, man. 2004.
There you go. Easy answer.
What
about you?
The F2004. I'd probably go with like a Stirling Moss era.
Ooh.
Like I like that one with like the open sides.
Yeah.
Keep cool, you know, I get a bit flustered, you know. So,
yeah,
you know,
get
so,
a bit
you
know, of air myself. In there.
Also, I can probably drive one of those without killing myself. Whereas I feel like if I did anything after 1975, I'd be toast.
Yeah, I see.
So,
there you go.
But actually, the cans
like
cars,
cars,
the old like the old McLarens, like the old McLaren sports cars, the orange ones, those were really cool. Not a Formula One car, but like
back in the day. Well, anyways, I want to ask you a couple of questions about this year because obviously you talked earlier in the episode before your Five Guys break about.
If we started this at the beginning of the year, right? I had a sponsorship deal on the table potentially for Gabby in Melbourne.
Did you?
This is going a while back.
Did you?
Yeah, classic driver management. Style, the sponsor obviously ran out of money, fell through, never got in touch. And then I think you were fastest in FP1 in Bahrain, or you were up there, and then you qualified on pole, and then I think you qualified P2, and then you won the first race, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I immediately sent a text to Will Beeper's name, and I said, you fucked that one up, didn't you?
Because James had actually found a sponsor that had ran... We were potentially going to bring on board for myself and yourself, actually, and it didn't go through. And obviously, when you P won that race,
he was from Melbourne.
Yeah,
you know I won in Melbourne, so he
fucked
up twice.
That was rubbing salt in the wounds, mate.
Yeah. Oh, I text him in Melbourne too.
So going through your season, mate, what has been the highlight of obviously forget Monza because
you're on fire out of the gate and it didn't really stop.
I mean, the highlight was. For sure, the beginning of the year because it was the only two features I won in the entire year.
than the Novalak approach.
After was just about, you know, keeping it cool and scoring the points needed. And, you know, the guys clearly knew that I couldn't risk it anything during the year. So they were just, you know, completely diving bombing me every corner in the races and everything, trying just, you know, to crash or something like this, because they knew I couldn't risk it. So at that point was just about managing and finishing the podium when I could, or winning any race. But my highlight, I think, was Melbourne. My race in Melbourne was, I don't know, it was, I think, the best race of my life. Because, it was too many DRS zones and it was very cool.
To be honest, I will literally tell you exactly what happened following that race. So obviously, in F3, and generally speaking, when you win in F3 or in F2, you've got your media duties and you've got a lot of things to do following your race. You're not generally available until probably a couple of hours after the race.
Yeah.
So I'd finished my feature, which was roughly about the time, maybe an hour later, you came back into the F2 paddock. And I can't remember if it was Roberto. Yeah, I think it was Roberto. So obviously we had a coach that coached both of us this year. And I walked up to him and I was like, I think that is one of the single best drives I've ever seen done in a like junior single seat format. Yeah. Just from the point of view that you're under pressure.
It was wet dry, wasn't it?
No, was it wet? No, it was dry. It was dry, but he was, so I think it was four DRS zones, right? Or three DRS zones.
Yeah, it was one, two,
four DRS zones.
Yeah.
With a super efficient DRS in F3.
Mm.
And he couldn't get out from that gap. The guy behind literally couldn't get above 1 second because the DRS was so powerful that he kept reeling him back in every single time. And man, it must have been 20 laps or something like this. Not one fucking mistake.
No.
One mistake, he was done. Like you were getting past.
Yeah.
And I really came into the box and I was like, mate, that is a championship winning drive in the second race of the year. Like that's a statement.
That's why I said it was the best highlight of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you.
It's the Novalak approval, mate. That's why it's the best.
Endorsed by Novalak. We should just start riding that on cars.
No, but it was a special race, that one for me.
You're so far away from everything. Because I was there in Australia as well. It felt like a special event for the junior formula guys because it was so weird to be there. You know what I mean?
This guy made it a lot also less because I won the first round in Bahrain and then, you know, I will be honest, I didn't imagine to, you know, straight away in F3 first round, you know, not many tests with the GP3 or, you know, I was just a few, like 3-4 days of testing in overall. So I had not enough testing, but I was very competitive in the collective test of Formula 3. But then I went to Bahrain, I won the first race and I was not nervous, but I was like, okay, I really have the chance maybe to build something in this championship. I have a championship car. I have a good engineer, everyone around me, you know. And I remember Clem telling me, let's go to Melbourne. Let's go to Australia 1 week before. And we went 1 week
so
before.
You guys went to the Gold Coast.
Yeah, we went to Gold Coast. Yeah. But it was very nice because, you know, everything was much more relaxed. I managed to be out of the racing world for a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I went there with Clem and we rent a very nice penthouse. Was it
a nice flat. It was a really nice flat. Like literally, you know the Gold Coast,
but
it's huge towers. They must be like 60 floors tall. You're right on the beach.
It really is just Australia, Miami, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's the Australian Miami. And it was a
we had some friends trip. There.
Yeah, we had some friends there.
We had
there.
Max and Flavio, so we were there spending time. We went to some bars and we went to you know, to the restaurants and everything. It was amazing.
Mm.
And then when I went to the race weekend, it was like on Wednesday, we flew
on Wednesday. Like
it was so relaxed, you know, and then everything was so easy for me, you know. I went to do the track walk. We had fun. We were doing, I think, together. I have a nice photo of us doing the track walk there. And then was, I think, the most easiest weekend in terms of pressure for me.
Yeah.
So what I take from this is if you want to win an F3 feature,
you're an unbelievable driver coach.
I am literally the single best driver coach that you can think of.
Yeah.
Go on a week away with me doing whatever we want to do, you know, parties, that kind of thing. And then you come to the racetrack completely relaxed, bang, and you're on pole, and bang, you win the race.
Yeah. Yeah, I Yeah, I've got a good idea for a brand name for it, but it might be better off here. So yeah, and you sprung off there from, so that you go into Europe and you're kind of already in championship mode by the time you get to Europe.
Yeah, I was 20 points ahead in that moment.
Yeah,
in the championship, so I had a good margin already, and then yes, was just about keeping it
managing
there.
It, which you did.
Yeah, I was always top five during the first five rounds. I think my worst session in Formula 3 was a top five in testing or whatever. The worst position I got was a top five.
Yeah,
and then that was very positive, and then I think I step out of the top five in Silverstone.
Jesus. So yeah, July was the first time you finished outside the top five.
Yeah, I think
it
was the first time.
But then you won on Sunday, didn't you?
No, on Saturday in Silverstone, yeah. I finished. Okay, I'm not counting the sprint races. It's reverse grid, so I mean, it's difficult.
They
you start
count
P12.
As race wins. I think Marcus Armstrong would attest to that. Sprint races count as race wins.
They still do count as race wins if you win a sprint.
No, exactly. It counts, but I mean, I'm just counting the feature ones. But anyway, was cool. I think Silverstone, I was P6, and then in Spa, I completely fucked up.
There's always one round. I mean, even you know, myself back in my F3 year where I finished third in the championship, I had the single worst round I think of my career in Red Bull Ring. Had an average qualifying, but it put me in a decent position. It was the year where we had two reverse grids as well, where you had the reverse grid and then it was reversed again, and then you had your
sprint
feature.
Sprint race one, sprint race two.
Yeah. And so sprint race one, I was fighting for the lead, and I still think it was a racing incident. Some say it was more my fault. Some say it was more the other guy's fault. I don't know. Whatever it was. Anyways, didn't score. Had a bit of a puncture. Out of T4. And then the following day, had a horrendous race. Starting from P last and finished P12 or P11. But it was good. Like, obviously making a lot of moves. And then nearly got killed on Sunday. So,
By Flying Leclerc.
Flying Leclerc and a little tussle between them two, him and Victor going into T4, and I myself probably a couple of hundred meters in front. As you can tell, it was a pretty big shunt if he's managed to get me by the apex. So
large.
But that was my weekend of the year. So.
So you managed it all the way through to, and you had a weird situation right in Monza where all you needed to do was make sure Paul Aaron didn't qualify on pole.
Did it ever go through your mind to put yourself right in front of Aaron and say,
just put the
whenever you start
on.
Your lap, I'm going to be two cars in front and there's no way you're getting into the top 20.
Doesn't matter how many impeding penalties you get as long as he's not on pole.
At some point, I was also so pissed that I didn't win any more feature races that I was like, man, I need to do it in the last round. I need to do it in the last round. So I didn't... I cared about the championship, but I knew that the chances of Aaron winning was very low. You know, he needed to score everything he could.
Yeah,
literally every fastest lap, pole, winning two races, man, everything he could. So I was like more focused about really trying to win the feature on Sunday. But you know, my quality was okay, but not the best one. That was P5, P4, I think. Before.
Yeah.
And on Sunday I was flying, but then I was trying to get out of the air in the last corner. I got the curve and I almost did a Leclerc in the wall in the last corner. So,
Who was Peroni?
Peroni.
From Australia. Had the largest F3 shunt
I think
anyone's ever
had. Yeah, it was the biggest.
Parabolica there.
Yeah, but since then, actually, I think that's the reason why we've now got like a proper gravel trap rather than
sausage
what used to be sausage curves.
Basically a runway, isn't it?
Sausage curve. It was a runway. But yeah, no. So, it was a good weekend. Good after party, too.
In Milan.
Yeah.
Do you remember much of it or?
Everything. Why wouldn't?
No, it was good times, good times. James, you were there.
I was there. I was in a different area to you guys.
How so?
Yeah, I was running a very different budget that night.
Nothing came out of my pocket, which is great.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I think Trident was celebrating, weren't they?
So Trident, it was a big celebration. No, I think, you know what?
Getting into the area where all the tables were, it was like getting into North Korea. It was like, they weren't having a bar of it.
Oh, mate, it was so hard to get in. And but we managed to get you in at some point, didn't we?
No.
Oh, no.
No. I was good, mate.
You were chilling out with a backbone.
I was down there hanging out with the plebs. No worries. But we had we had a few dramas in Milan, which I think we've covered on the podcast before. But
have we?
When my mate got the absolute shit kicked out of him for his Rolex.
Yeah, we had a stolen Rolex that weekend. We had it was a rough weekend. Yeah.
The funny thing was, so there's this after party organization that does a few of them, And so we're looking through the ticket price. So you guys, you text me in the morning, say we're doing that after party. I said, all right. So I text my mates who were like there from New Zealand. I was just kind of showing them around. This is what Europe's like. And the prices come through, and it's like a lot for a silver, what they called a silver table, and then like quite a bit less than a lot for a bronze table. And they're all kind of like, no, we should do the bronze. I was like, trust me, like you just want general. If you, unless you're up with the big dogs, you just want to go GA. And sure enough, like they sell way too many GA tickets, and anyone with a silver or a bronze table just gets absorbed by the crowd. At one point, Ali stood on top of somebody's bronze table to talk to you.
Yeah.
And you were called to...
Yeah.
I think she knocked over about four flutes of champagne.
Yes, no, Ali was having a bit of
I believe the medical term is...
Did she talk to you?
She tried. She was gone.
You remember the layout of the club, and the tables were a little bit higher up, we were on. And you had the tables right below, and there was this sort of couch there for the table. And Ali has just gone steaming in down the inside, mate. Has literally pushed two people out of the way to stand on the couch to give me a hug to say hello, and then just proceeds to chatting to me.
I remembered it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at her, I'm like, Ali, you do realise you're standing on top of two
somebody
people,
else's
right?
table.
And she's like, oh, yeah, it's true. So she just turned around and walked off. And
at the end of that night, because, like, she got after it that night, because she'd been putting up with me and my mates for the better part of a week and a half.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she had a few liveness. And by the end of it, her and her pal were so smashed, and I was kind of over the drink. It had been a long trip. I wasn't drinking that night, so I was sober, but... gets around about 2 a.m. and then like I'm sober getting these two girls who cannot really walk that well trying to like get them into a cab. I looked like the biggest like it was such a bad look. It was such a bad look. I'd explain to me, oh, it's my girlfriend. Like it's just not, I'm not trying to, it was rough. It was rough. And then my mate tried to leave the club and yeah, like we said, got the absolute lights knocked out of him. And a yacht master ripped off his wrist.
Got a couple of questions for you, mate. We're going to take it back to the old karting days.
Oh, okay.
Rough karting time for you?
Loved it.
I think you had a good karting career.
No, I had a good one.
Yeah?
Yeah, solid karting career.
Yeah.
Who'd you drive for?
CRG my entire life.
Nice. Yeah. I like
his entire life. CRG.
I love a CRG.
Too many years with them.
For how many?
Five.
So
mini, what? Two juniors, one OK, and yeah, four years.
Good on you. What time did you move into cars?
I was 15.
They're getting so young, you know.
20.
You know, my biggest wake-up call was last year when I looked at Juan and I looked around the F2 grid and I was like, holy shit, not one of them's above 18.
It's amazing how old you were this year and like, and just your second year in F2.
Mate, like, I was like, holy shit, I am a
veteran.
There's
so many rookies this year. It was because I feel like 20, I'm going to get my numbers wrong here somewhere, but 22... there was a lot of your Armstrongs, your Deruvalas, you had, you know, your Boshongs, you know, your Nissanis, your furniture, you know. And there was a lot less of those guys who were doing their kind of second, third year this year. Like, there was a lot of third and fourth years last year, and they've all fucked off. So there's a lot of new blood from Formula 3 this year. So you and Juan looked like,
we looked around,
the silver
like,
foxes of the paddock.
Yeah,
to be
honestly. Yeah. I myself dressing up as a 40-year-old anyways.
Doesn't help.
Always.
Yeah. Doesn't help. But actually,
but it's rubbed off.
Talking about outfits, you know, it's actually rubbed off. It feels like this is Clem Novak fashion school out here. I mean, you've got yourself a beautiful jacket there. James sporting the cardigan.
Lovely cardigan.
Looking
lovely. Really,
I mean,
enjoying it,
obviously, I'm still in my suit.
We look like we're suited up to go and sell Bibles. But
but yeah, no.
You're looking good, mate.
You're looking
black.
Really good, actually.
Very sexy.
What's the inspiration behind all this? And please don't say Novak.
Well, you want the true answer? Or
yeah, go on then. Give me the true answer.
Novak.
So I feel like everyone who befriends Novak just starts dressing a bit better, like over a bit. Would you agree? Like if once you get to know Clem, you almost feel like you kind of have to step up your game.
Yeah, because I mean, at the beginning, I was wearing some clothes that were a little bit different. Like, I mean, Drugovic style.
Streetwear.
Drugovic style.
See, he's probably my biggest failure in my career as a fashionista.
He's got good fashion though, Dre. It's very different to your
great fashion. It's different and I love it.
I'm loving this, and I
still use this type of clothes. You know?
I'll run a bit of drug.
I mean, Clem opened my eyes to some stuff because it's true, you know? Like, if you go like this to a meeting, you know, you're in a board meeting, you go there and there is some entrepreneurs and everything, and they see you using that large things, and you know, it is still very nice, but I mean, you cannot go to this type of meeting with these clothes. So and also you know, also my family dress a little bit like this, so I you know, was a little bit of an influence of everyone. And then I started to get this type of clothes and I liked it.
I'm on board, mate.
I'm gonna reiterate the fact that you know, I spent a year with Felipe. I tried my hardest. I said, look, mate, just wear your cashmere cardigan there. You put on some proper shoes. Those are sneakers. Those are not shoes.
He loves a sneaker.
He loves a sneaker. And I kept telling him,
man, don't say anything about the sneakers. They are so nice. I love
it. Yeah, I know, but still. I love it. Yeah, but at least, you know, you're wearing some. So I think this is the perfect example, actually. We've got some Loro Pianas.
Some genuine Loro Pianas?
Genuine Loro Pianas. And then over here, we've got some Loro Zaras. actually from Zara.
Okay. Yeah, but they have the best things, man. They have the best things.
Zara's fantastic.
They have the best things. Zara's. You spend like 20 times less and you get basically the same. Yes. For sure, not the same quality.
But no, nowhere near, but you know, it looks good on a podcast.
Yeah, but it's amazing.
So, mate, getting back to some meals. Obviously, this being a sort of screaming meals part of the show, food, drinks, you know, that kind of thing. What is your go-to pre-race meal?
Pre-race meal?
This year you race so early, it's probably
It's probably
not
breakfast.
Much. Yeah,
but it was breakfast, but many times as well it was after lunch, I think. Yeah. Qualies or something like this. Yeah. So.
What's the thing that gets
chicken,
you in the mood?
Chicken. Yeah. I don't like to
bit of a bit of a feijoada, maybe.
Well, for sure this is the best, but they don't make it in the catering in Formula 2. So if they had it, my friend.
Here we go. Are we allowed to?
Yeah, we're allowed to talk about F3 catering.
What was the worst one this year? Because I don't know if we've done that much on the F2 catering.
Man, I don't. You know, a lot of people say bad things about it, but I don't dislike it. Like it's okay. I mean, for sure it's expensive. You know, we all know it's expensive. The catering. You know, you can eat in a very very good restaurant for that price.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is good food. You can, you know, have.
Do you know what I can smell? I can smell a friendship with the staff and not wanting to annoy them. But yeah, so no, you actually don't find the catering that bad.
No, I don't.
Wow.
Sometimes the pizza's not that shit.
I like the pizza.
The pizza's not bad.
I like the pizza.
Pasta's always reliably terrible.
No.
No, but
pasta with the tomato sauce, it's okay.
But that's you fuck that up though? If you made it, you'd do it better, right?
But you know, you always need to look at the positive points as well. You're just looking at the negative. Man, the coffee machine there. It's fucking good. Come on. How many cups is we stole from them?
We've stolen a few of those pods. Yeah, no.
Every time we take one coffee, we take five cups.
We take five pods with us because we've got an espresso machine as well.
Bruno's going to send you an invoice if you're not careful.
Oh, yeah, I know. But no, it's true that there are some good things about it, but you are the first driver that's come on here and actually said it's not that bad.
Yeah.
No, I don't say it's good. I don't say
so you're changing your tune.
No, I didn't say it's good. I just said it's not bad. It's different. Good for me, it's when you go to a top restaurant, you know. It's not that bad. You can eat it. It's not that, I'm not going there. The food is terrible. No, man.
We all
it's just because
like that,
we're too much so sophisticated, you know.
You know, I'm surprised.
Are a guy that is like, or you eat in the best restaurant in Paris, or you don't go to the restaurant. That's the type of Clement
Novak. That's true, actually. So, it's a terrifying text when you get a message from Novak saying, should we do dinner? And you're like...
But fair play, this year, I will bring you to the best places in Brazil. Not expensive restaurants. The best places in Brazil, the best restaurants, are the one that you just walk out of your house, you look to the right, and there is Seu João.
Seu João.
He does the feijoada.
Like a Bourdain kind of documentary.
He does the feijoada, the rice, the chicken, the steak, everything. And how much it costs, you think?
I mean...
Give it a try.
Yeah. I'm gonna say it's under £5 for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Everything for €5, let's say.
Well, anyways, we've got to talk about this trip that I've got coming up.
Wait,
you're doing the America. 3 or 500 miles.
No. So I'm going to Brazil. As you know very well.
Oh, yeah,
I think
roughly,
I will be in Brazil when this video comes out. I'll probably... The 500 miles will have been completed. But anyways, let's say that we're, you know, back a couple of weeks before. I'm going to Brazil. We're going to race alongside each other.
Why don't you announce it in Portuguese, and then all of our Portuguese Brazilian fans can
come on.
Get down and watch. And we'll just put a clip out before the episode comes out.
My mind's gone blank.
No.
Eu amo Brasil. How do you say I'm going? Eu vou Brasil em 2 semanas. Semanas?
Good job, yeah.
Para el 500, 500.
Correr.
Para correr as 500 miles de
karting. Perfect, man.
Straight together.
Oh, fuck. But yeah, anyways.
You're going to go to do a Brazilian go-karting race.
The actual real 500 miles. It's not Indianapolis.
No.
It's the karting one.
I'm actually
Grand Javier.
Genuinely.
But you know the F1 legends from Brazil, they are
rare. I'm super jealous. I'm super, because I've been watching
Felipe
since
Massa, Barrichello, like, Canan.
08, you know. 2010, they had the bodywork on it. Like, yeah, the whole thing. I've watched this race before. Yeah.
It's actually one of the most, it's probably the most important Brazilian karting race.
Custom, one of.
Yeah, there is like different ways, you know. You go to the most important is the national championship is the Brazilian, but I mean the one that the F1 drivers, ex-F1 drivers race, and the actual F1 drivers, because for example, Drugo is a reserve driver and he will be racing there as well.
It is a bit of a dream team that we're pulling off.
Is there a live stream operator?
Of course, there's a live stream, James.
I mean, you know what I'm
thinking. Can we announce it? The lineup or not?
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean,
but now the race probably will be passed it's
by
done.
Then. So okay. The lineup will have been announced. But I mean, it will.
And you've probably seen me commentating on it.
You'll have seen James commentate the race in English, because obviously I think it'd be quite difficult to find a British commentator.
My Portuguese expires at Cerveza.
It's Cerveza, yeah. No, but it'll be me. It'll be you. Who else?
Drugo.
Caio. And your brother.
My brother and Sete Camara.
I've heard he knows how to party, actually.
Oh, he does. I think he probably does know how to party.
Sete Camara.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
Never went party with him.
Maybe. But yeah, so it's a bit of a weird thing, though, because it's 6 drivers. But
two
between
carts.
Yeah, makes sense.
So essentially, I think the run plan at the moment, correct me if I'm wrong, is I'm definitely not doing quali.
No, we've established that.
My brother, whoever is the quickest is doing quali.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's the thing.
And then on top of that, I think I'm probably not doing the first stint. I'll probably do second stint, get my stint out early on, let the boys handle it whilst I head off to the bar to get a couple of caipirinhas.
That's my kind of endurance.
I think that's the run plan.
You want to do like the early evening session, you know, and then really just clock off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think I won't be driving past 6 o'clock at night.
No, I wouldn't recommend it.
No. And then I'll let you boys handle the rest, and I'll be there on the pit wall.
With?
Caipirinha.
With a caipirinha.
Yeah.
And
whoever else you can find on Raya, I suppose. Vampy.
And Vampy. I'll be on the pit wall with Vampy as well. You won't know, James, but some of our Brazilian viewers will probably know.
The legend.
I mean, so you're looking forward to spending New Year's in Brazil.
New
as
Year's
well,
in Brazil,
that
as well.
Kind of carry on. So you've got a lot of content to look forward to.
And mate, what's your predictions for next year? Go on, give us your thoughts. What's your thoughts going into
Quite
next
like
year?
I'm in a good team.
You are
Virtuosi. A solid team. They never won the championship, but they have been always on
right
top
there.
Three, top
yeah.
two. So. They finished third with Jack this season, even if he struggled a lot at the beginning of the season.
First half, yeah. Everyone kind of almost wrote
and
him
then
off, and then he made this charge. Yeah.
He was the one that scored the most points probably after summer break, I would say.
Yeah. Mm.
So I would say I'm very positive for next season, especially with this team. I've been working with them in Abu Dhabi for the test and was very positive.
How was it, working with the team? Obviously, you've gone from racing in an Italian team like Trident, which is very much family oriented. How does it feel to change into a British team? Because sometimes it can be quite different in terms of the...
I guess, tell you firsthand it is.
Yeah, it's quite different. And I wouldn't say
it's different, the
culture around the team.
I mean, like, you know how it's Giacomo and all these guys, you know, in Trident, they're very Italian people.
Yeah.
But
nice.
Like,
they're
my engineer
friendly.
Next year will be Spanish. So he's a little bit like, you know, Italian and
Mediterranean.
And,
yeah.
And, but the rest is very British. But they were very nice to me, you know, and I can see that we are pointing to the right direction, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Abu Dhabi was very positive. For my first time in the car, I was straight on pace and quite quick, I would say.
So, and also, you know, Jack was Trident F3. His style obviously worked in the Trident F3 car. Yours goes all right.
Yeah, but Jack, like, results. Yeah, exactly. Jack's like a very pointy car, I would say.
He likes a pointy car.
And that's a little bit like I want as well. I was pushing to get more and more, to be honest, in the test. But
I found the same in my Alfa Romeo test.
Yeah. Remember, so like he actually did. I don't know if you've seen the reel on my on my Instagram there. I'll show you a quick picture.
Very
of
the Alfa Romeo 157. Yeah, very fronty.
We'll put it on the screen here for the viewers. Maybe a couple of pictures of the car James was driving.
It's very similar to a Formula 2 car.
Oh, I've
anyways.
Seen this video.
Yeah.
Very similar to a Formula 2 car. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, the weight is probably very similar.
Yeah, weight's probably similar. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. I've never been so scared in my life. I became a passenger princess for probably about 20 minutes next to this guy before he put it in the gravel.
Yeah.
And
you put it in the gravel.
Oh, open testing. You need to find
the limits. Yeah, he found the limits.
You were pushing.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Inside of five corners, I turn to him and I go, holy shit, you're actually good. He was sideways, mate. It was greasy conditions, half slicks. I was like, wow.
It's apparently jet fuel all the way down the street.
But was everything under control or you were just pushing?
Yeah.
Under control?
Yeah.
I beg to disagree.
There was one time when it got a little bit out of control, but you know.
What, the one where we finished in the gravel?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only out of control moment, I'm going to say, yeah.
Even then, I had it most of the way around the corner. I had that.
Yeah. Well, and on that bombshell, I guess. Probably time to end.
Yeah, I mean, Gabby, let's look forward to it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much for the invite.
You've been an amazing guest, friend of the show. We'll be rooting on for you next season, mate. Fucking go, Gabby!
Yeah, get prepared for some seriously biased race commentary in Formula 2 next year.
You will probably see some reels where we're literally screaming at the screen if something goes wrong or if you're winning. And yeah, I mean, all the best to you and come back on whenever you want.
Thank you very much.
No, it won't.
Thank you, James.
No worries, mate. Hey,